Well, good morning, Stark Baptist Church. It's good to see you. I think I'll always say this, but it really is a joy to get to be with you on a Sunday morning. Thank you to the worship team. Incredible job leading us in worship this morning. I want to talk to you about being desperate for God. I think that was a perfect just segue right into where we want to go this morning, about being desperate for God. And I want to start by just kind of sharing a little story. My brother is a runner, just like Pastor Jeff is. And I learned a long time ago, I think it's Proverbs 28, says the wicked run when nobody is chasing them. So I'm following the scriptures. And I am not a runner, but he is. And I'm talking about my brother, not Pastor Jeff. And so he's in shape, and we were out working last summer out on one of our deer stands, and he was just, you know, working me to death. And it got to the point where I was like, man, I think I need to sit down for just a minute. And I was, you know, you kind of stumble, everything's spinning. He's like, yeah, you look like you need to sit down for a minute. Go ahead and do that. And it just kept getting worse and worse. See, I had forgotten one very important detail when you're working in the hot summer sun, because I'm an office guy. I'm sitting in my office all week long, 40 hours, you know, I never get out. I've forgotten that detail that when you're out there, you're sweating, you're hot, you're supposed to bring water with you. And we did not do that. So I was out there, I'm about to pass out. My brother's still going, you know, working, and he's just laughing at me because I'm a little, you know, not as strong as he is. And he's like, all right, let's get out of here. So I got back to the truck, and I'll never forget, man. Do you think, when I got to the truck, we finally got some water, do you think in that moment I was like, man, just give me just a little sip, that's all I need? No. I was desperate for water in that moment, so I took the first bottle. I just dumped it all over me. You know, I got to drink. The second bottle I drank, third bottle I drank. I was desperate for high-quality H2O, as Bobby Boucher would say back in the day. So that reminded me, that moment, I was thinking about this as I was preparing for to be with you, of how desperate I was in that moment for just water, for something to refresh my soul, because I was worn out. I was honestly probably in a really bad situation. If I hadn't done something, who knows what, if he hadn't been with me, you know, I guess he saved my life. Don't tell him that. But I realized how many times in our lives, especially in our spiritual lives, do we wait to the last possible second to realize, wait a second, I am desperate right now. Like, what is going on in my soul that I'm just thirsty. I don't know which way is up, down. I don't know which direction. I have no sense of direction. I have no sense of what God may be doing in my life. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh yeah, I forgot one important detail. Jesus, have I gone to Jesus about what I'm supposed to be doing right now? No. That's how we live our lives so many times. Am I desperate for God to lead me? Am I desperate for Him to give me direction? Do I wait until the last possible second to come to Him for some temporary relief, and then all of a sudden I feel better and I'm back to the same patterns again, right? That's how we live our lives a lot of times. That's how we relate to Jesus. We only run to Him when we need Him the most, yet we know that we have access at any point. We don't have to be desperate to run to Jesus. Did we know that? Are you with me? You don't have to be desperate to run to Jesus. We have access to Him at any point. And He said, John chapter 4, talking to the woman at the well, He told her, as He's sitting at the well, everyone who drinks from this water will get thirsty again. But whoever drinks from the water that I will give him will never get thirsty again. In fact, the water that I give him will become a well of water springing up in him for eternal life. So there's our picture there. Jesus is the well that will not run dry. And you have access to it right now. You have access to it tomorrow morning. You have access to it Wednesday night. It doesn't matter what point in the week. You have access to the well that will not run dry, and it springs up to in him for eternal life. We see in Psalms 42, as the deer pants for the streams of living water, the streams of water, so my soul longs for you, my God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. Is that the state of your heart this morning? Or are we just going through the routines again? Are we here and you know, hoping that God's going to speak to me, hoping that God's going to give me something to get me through the week. And then we move on about our day, or are we longing in such a way? You know, we used to have this song. I don't know if you remember Shane and Shane. They're still around, but they're a little bit, you know, that was my generation. They had this song. They really got famous on it. It was all about, Lord, I want to yearn for you. I want nothing else but you right now. Is that the state of your heart? That is a heart that is desperate for God. And there's kind of a healthy aspect to being desperate for God. You know, like that it forces all of the distractions to the side so that we can focus on the one thing that we need for satisfaction and purpose and direction to get us back on track. So I want to take us back. I know you've been in the series Kings and Kingdoms. Is that right? Kings and Kingdoms. Awesome series. And I know he's walking you through, you know, David. We're going through those, or y'all are going through those kings. And so I want to connect the dots. I'm actually going to make the jump all the way to the end of the kingdom. And you know, the kingdom's actually gone by this point. But the period of Old Testament that God's people had lost their desire for God. And what we see, and what you're going to see as you study through these kings and kingdoms, is the state of the heart of the people depended on, it was a weird kind of correlation here. The state of the king's heart would be translated into how the people would live too. And so if the king's heart was off, way off base, he would lead them way off base. And so however far off he got, the people got off too. And the king's heart was reflected on the people. So if his heart wasn't after God, neither were the people. And so by the time I'm going to take you to Jeremiah chapter 2, if you have your Bibles, go ahead and turn there. I may give you a second to get there before I start reading. In Jeremiah's time, if you know the history of this, God's people had been in exile for 70 years. Or were going to exile for 70 years. And if you just pick up the story right there, you wonder, like, what in the world happened? I thought this kingdom was growing, and we were getting successful here. We were winning battles, and we had a place. Well, they did. But like I said, the kings, you know, one after the other, the farther they got from God, the farther they led the people away from God. And so you get to the point in 2 Chronicles 36, we kind of get an answer of why would God allow his people to just be dispersed into this exile. It says that they didn't heed his name, and there was no remedy for these people anymore. They were so far off base that there was no remedy. Now, let's put this pieces all together. If God could do whatever he wants to. And so he could crash into their life, bring them back in, but he had allowed it. He had allowed these kings to lead them further and further, and he allowed the people to take on these other gods and to worship. It was just a mess to the point where he just kind of gave them over to it. They didn't heed his name anymore. There was no remedy for the people. They thought they could build their own kingdom better than what God could build. And over, they would fall into the traps of greed and self-preservation. And let's try this form of worship and see if that helps us. To the point where God allowed them to go into exile. Now, Jeremiah comes on the scene and gives the unpopular opinion. See, there were false prophets, and they would say, oh yeah, this is what God has for us. Just he's going to get us out of this in just a few years. And Jeremiah comes on the scene and says, no, not the case. You're going to be here pretty much your whole lives, most of you. Most of you are going to die right here in exile. So plant yourself, seek the welfare of the people, and let's get moving on. And it's almost as though God was telling his people in this time, you are going to see how desperate you are for me. I'm going to hand you over. I'm going to let you see how good you had it back then, how I could be right there for you, but you walked away from me. Your desperation is focused on other idols, and you don't think you need me anymore, but you really do. See, God knows in desperate times, you'll run to what you think will save you. When we're desperate, man, and you don't know where else to run, you're just going to run to what's natural for you. He knows our hearts. He knows if you're desperate, you aren't worried about minor things, but the one thing. And we see desperate people all over the place, filling their hearts and their bodies with all kinds of destructive things. And at the heart of addiction is a desperation There's this old guy, Henry David Thoreau. He said this, and he was right. The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. So when we're desperate, God knows that he has the opportunity to show us his glory and turn our hearts to himself. And that is what he wants for all of our people, all of his people. So the big question we have to ask, okay, we've kind of wrestled with, why would God allow his people into this desperate situation for so many years? But the other question we have to ask is, could this happen to us? Could we be on the same path that God's people were at this time? What can we learn from the Israelites, the people of God that Jeremiah is talking to? Well, let's get a glimpse into it. I told you, Jeremiah chapter 2. I want to take you to verse 11 through 13. And watch what he says. This is, God speaking through Jeremiah. He says, "Has a nation ever exchanged its gods, but they were not gods?" Then, hold up, right? That point right there is, that's it. Has any nation, up to this point, and if you were to observe the world right now, does anybody ever turn away from their God to other gods that they don't, they're just going to give it a try and see, is this going to actually work? Has anybody ever done that? So this is the first point. No, the answer. It's nobody in the world is running, has their system that they think works, and they're going to abandon that for something else. And yet he's saying that God's people are here. Has any nation ever exchanged its gods, but they were not gods? Yet my people have exchanged their glory for useless idols. Be appalled at this, heavens, and be shocked and utterly desolated. This is the Lord's declaration. He said this, watch what happens. For my people have committed a double evil. They've committed two sins. They have forsaken me or abandoned me, the fountain of living water, and dug cisterns for themselves, broken cisterns that cannot hold water. So here's the state of the people. They've abandoned the fountain that they had, and they've tried to develop their own way of doing things over here and to live off of and survive it. Another way of putting this is they trusted their own efforts instead of the God who can give them so much more. And they had lost their desperation for God because they felt like they could do it all on their own. But do you see what they traded out? They traded the fountain of living water for their own way of doing things. And I want to tell you, and I can't overstate this enough, trading living water for anything else is a terrible, no good, very bad choice. Trading living, a fountain of living water over here for anything else that we try to manufacture on our own is a terrible choice. They had abandoned, it says they abandoned it. So it's not that like the well had run up and they needed to look for whatever was next. They just walked up, they said, okay, we've been here for long enough and, the well's good, but hey, let's go try something else. Let's see what, we got bored with it or something. And if you can imagine in this day and time and in that land, I have not been there, I'm sure some of you have, how dry and parched the land is. So even more, like, we're in Louisiana, like, most of us live close to water. Like, it feels like we're just all floating. There's water all around us, So, like, water's not an issue for us. Not that we would want to drink all the water that's around us, but it's really not an issue. But in this day, and in this place, in a dry and parched land, when you have a fountain of living water, a well that doesn't run dry, you have life. You have an opportunity to live to the next day. You don't have to worry about where am I going to get my next drink of water. I don't have to go miles and miles and carry it back. It's right there. And we see this picture all throughout the Bible that where there is streams of living water, there's life all around it, and there's growth and everything is healthy. But it says they abandoned that good water source And it was foolish, especially to try to go and manufacture another. And so there's two arguments here. We've already covered one. Nobody has ever done this. No nation abandons their gods to go after another one. It's just ridiculous. So why are they? Notice, too, that the heavenly, go back to verse 12. It says, be appalled at this heaven. So get this perspective. So all of a sudden, God's, you know, he's like, logically, nobody abandons their gods to go after another one. But then it's like he's in heaven. He's looking around going, does anybody else see this? From the heavenly perspective, looking down at earth, going, what? It's like they were all, you know, watching the game of life going, no. Yesterday, oh, I'm about to confess. Y'all are going to turn on me really quick. I was watching the Alabama game, okay? Alabama had the game sealed. They're doing this onside kick thing with 40 seconds left. And I'm watching the TV going, no. And the Alabama misses it. You know, like I guess I need to say I'm for Alabama. And so, you know, you're watching it going, no, please don't do this. That is the picture of what's going on in heaven. They're watching what's happening with God's people going, no, why would you abandon this for anything else? I don't know how it all works, but it's like we get a glimpse of or heaven gets a glimpse back into time on work. And if we could just get that perspective, I think we too would avoid so many pitfalls in our life. If we could just step back from our present reality, lift up our eyes, maybe ask God to give us a glimpse of what's going on here. And maybe, just maybe, we would avoid some of these pitfalls. Maybe we are, too, walking away from the well that God has provided for us. You see, people don't just wake up one day and realize, my life is a mess. You could trace this series of bad choices all the way back to whatever point that led to that. So we have a source of abundant life available to us now, and it's just not wise to go anywhere else for our source of life, for our to be sustained, to be satisfied. Which is my next point. My efforts, your efforts will not satisfy me. My efforts to be satisfied in life will not satisfy me. St. Augustine, this great theologian, he said this: you made us for yourself, O God. Our hearts are restless until they find rest in you. My efforts will not satisfy me. Our wells, that's what Jeremiah is saying, the wells that we have dug for ourselves, these places that we are running to find satisfaction in life, are busted. We can't outwork God. Our efforts cannot satisfy us. Our awards, our successes cannot satisfy us. Our kids, and I am learning this, our kids are not given to us to be this satisfying thing in our lives, present, or this person. Nothing. See, they didn't have to go and dig their own wells, and neither do we. So whatever you're digging right now will not hold water. Your job, that maybe is good, maybe it's not, cannot hold water. Your finances, maybe they're good, maybe they're not, cannot hold water. Your kids, things are going good, they'll eventually crack. They're going to drain you. So don't trade the fountain of living water for anything of our own efforts. And it seems like, I'm just trying to make sense of why God's people would all of a sudden, like I said, I mean, it wasn't just one day they woke up and decided, hey, we're done with this, we're going to move on. But why would they get like this? It seems like they had gone so long depending on just the routines of life. And that's the dangerous thing about finding something that works. And especially in church world, man, we find one thing that works one Sunday, all of a sudden we're going to do it every Sunday, you know? And we get into these routines. And then all of a sudden, you know, years down the road, we're still doing the same thing because it worked back then, and it's just routine now, so it's still not working. We do this all the time in our churches. Could we be guilty of the same things? Could we be the ones who have gone through the motions for long enough and really have without even knowing it, have walked away from the fountain that once provided for us. Could we be a lot like them? Could our routine church attendance and acts of service be what we are trying to depend on? Let me ask you this. What brings you security right now in your life? If you could, if there was one thing that you could point to, what brings you joy? If God were to take that away right now, would you still follow him? If your sense of security and your sense of joy were both in this afternoon taken away from you or changed, would you still follow God? What are you depending on to satisfy your thirst? If it's not the fountain of living water, it will let you down. And I said it earlier, we have access to this fountain at all times, and nothing else can satisfy our soul. That's why in Proverbs 3, it says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all of your ways, submit to him, and he will make your path straight." That's what he wants for your life. My efforts in this life will not satisfy me. There's nothing. And here's the beautiful point of this. This is God's grace and mercy towards us. Is this, God doesn't force anyone to drink from the living water. He doesn't force it. He is not begging you to stay near to him. He is not going to make you stay at the well and drink. This is the crazy, I don't understand this. That God has the ability, the control over all things, and yet he lets his people wander away from him. He didn't take any personal freedom from them to stop them from sinning against him. He's not going to force it. And once we have abandoned the fountain, we start buying into the other wells, the worldly ways of thinking. And then all of a sudden, you know, what the world tells you, do what your heart tells you to do. That's terrible advice. You know that? Follow your heart. Jeremiah's going to say, the heart is deceptive above all things and desperately sick. So why would we ever follow our heart? I don't know. The psalmist says, "Taste and see that the Lord is good. How happy is the person who takes refuge in him." Psalm 34. If we could just compare the two, like run into our own well, never going to satisfy. Just run to Jesus and he will satisfy. We get spiritually blinded. I think that's what it is. It's spiritual blindness to go that this way. And I've seen this happen for years and years and years. I've worked with college students for a long time. And most of those college students would grow up in a church very similar to this one. And would be very active each and every Sunday. And then they'd go to college and all of a sudden, there's this spiritual blindness that happens into them that they think, well, I think I'm going to run to this for this, and maybe I'll go back to the well at some point. And it's just spiritual. It's all I can think of what it could be is spiritual blindness, where you think you could see, but you're actually completely blind. And like I said, God doesn't force his way on anyone. He could just show us the way. He could just make us. But he wants us to grow in our knowledge of him. He wants our hearts to be led towards him. And he knows what we need. He's a good father. I was helping my daughter, who is now in seventh grade. This is when she was in sixth grade. Sixth grade math is probably the worst thing on earth, if I had to guess. And so she's got 30 problems. It's 8:30 at night. I'm tired. She's tired. We got to work through these things. And so, honestly, I hit the point. Maybe if you're with me, parents of sixth grade mathers, you know what I'm talking about. You hit the point where it's like, I'm going to do this for her. I'm going to send her to bed, and I will finish her homework. If you're a sixth grade teacher, I apologize. You've thought it too, you know. There's a point where it's like, I'm just going to do her homework because I'm tired of this. And if we keep screaming at each other, it's going to, you know, the sin is just going to pile on. So what do we do here? But I have to remember, I am not taking the test. Like this math is not for me just to finish. The point of the homework is not just to finish the homework. The point of her homework is to prepare her for what is to come whenever that test is given. And I think God, being a good father, has that in mind when he allows us this struggle, when he allows us to walk away from him and to struggle with life and to struggle through the situations that we get ourselves in. He is a good, good father. It lets us realize that we are helpless. And you know, in that moment, I let her work through it, but she goes, "Okay, Dad, help me with this." Man, I jump on. I am all over that. Like, sure, I'll help you. I wish I could just do it for you, but I can't. They step in and help out. And I think that's the heart of God here. That he could just fix it for them. He could just pull them back in and place them where he wants them to be. But he wants them to know this is not at all where you want to be. He wants their hearts to be stirred to come back to him. And so later on in Jeremiah, he's going to say, "I know the plans I have for you." This is the Lord's declaration. Plans for your well-being and not for disaster, to give you a future and a hope. He already knows. But yet in that moment, we've got to trust him with this. In that moment, he's going to allow us to struggle with it. So the next point, we are deceived if we think we are going to be satisfied with temporary things. Maybe this is another way to say the same thing. We're deceived if we think we're satisfied with temporary things. See, the Israelites believed that they had the man-made wells that they had built were better than the fountain that God had already provided. And what they found out was their wells were temporary. So the more trust they would put into it, the more it's going to just break and leave them spiritually dry, and they have to come back all over and find another one. Over time, they stopped holding water. And what we need to do today is ask ourselves, am I desperate enough here? Am I really desperate, or am I still seeking to be satisfied? Am I deceived with these temporary things? Or am I desperate for God? You know, we are my generation coming up. We're the next leaders, all that stuff. But we are the most distracted, the most hurried generation that there has ever been. And we're efficient. Man, we can do stuff on our phones in a second that used to take, you know, hours and hours to do. We can knock it out quick. We're efficient. But we're also the most distracted generation that there has ever been. And so maybe part of us turning our hearts back to God is to remove distractions. So let me ask you this. When was the last time that you had undistracted, unhurried time with God? That there was no point that you opened up the Word, you were reading it, you were praying, and there was no point that you just had, you knew, okay, I've got to shut this down and move on to the next thing. When was the last time this happened? Uninterrupted, meaningful time with God. For some of us, it's been a long time. And let me tell you this. I'm in the church every day, and I fall into the same trap. So you're not alone. If you think a pastor doesn't, you know, get distracted and fall into the same pits, you're deceived too. When was the last time that we had meaningful, unhurried, uninterrupted, meaningful time with God? Your time with God is the most important thing that you can do this week. I know you got a checklist a mile long of stuff that you got to get done. But the most important thing that you can do is run to the fountain that does not run dry. And this is my point. And again, this is not rocket science at all. But I want you to know that Jesus is the only one who can satisfy your soul. Nothing else. Nothing else. And you don't have to get to a point of desperation to have access to this fountain of living waters. How bad do you want it? You see, when our physical bodies, like I talked about earlier, when our physical bodies get thirsty, they will remind us, systems start shutting down, and you get to a point where you're going to have to either be carried out or help yourself. And if we ignore that, you know, everybody's going to know. If you don't eat something here sooner or later, you're getting hangry, and everybody's going to know, and they may let you know about that. Our spiritual lives are different. See, when our spiritual lives get hungry or thirsty, it just goes silent. There are no warning signs. It just kind of, the Spirit is very, I guess, courteous, is a gentleman. He's just going to step back and go, okay, there's no desperation here. And then all of a sudden, until you wake up and realize, man, I have no sense of vibrance in my spiritual life right now. Jeremiah 29:13 says, "You will seek me and find me when you search for me with all of your heart." You'll seek me and find me. And if you've lost joy, if you can't see his good and perfect plan for your life, there's your answer. When you seek him, you will find him. John 7:37-38, "On the last and most important day of the festival, Jesus stood up and cried out, 'If anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. If anyone believes in me, as the scripture has said, will have streams of living water flow deep from within him.'" Flow from deep within him. Isn't that the life that we all want? Instead of feeling spiritually dry, we have living water. This is why the psalmist, Psalm 1, said, "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night." And watch, he is like a tree that is planted by streams of water that yields fruit in season, and its leaf does not wither. That is a spiritual life that God wants for each and every one of us, to be planted by the streams of water, to find every bit of our satisfaction and sustenance from him. So we have to trust his plan. His plan is for our good and his glory. And even if we can't see that right now, I can plant myself next to the fountain of living water, and I will see it eventually. When you depend on him, he will give you what you need. And if he is all you have, that is all you need. So you trust his plan. You call to him. Remember, he said, "I know the plans I have for you. Plans for your well-being, not for disaster, to give you a future and hope." He also said, "You'll call to me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." Part of our problem is that we just don't spend enough time in any kind of quality prayer. That's what we were talking about just a minute ago. When was the last time that we had undistracted, unhurried time where we could just seek his heart and lay it all out before him? Many of us are worn out and waiting on God to move. And we're desperate for him to do something. And as much as we hate to be in that kind of a place, there's just this benefit to it. When everything else fails us, man, God's got our hearts, and he draws us in. He wants us to cry out to him, not because he wants to watch us suffer, but because he's able to do more than what we can comprehend. So let me ask you this. Is there something that you are scared to ask God to do in your life? Is there something that you're holding back from him? Is there some reason that you're doing that? That you're still trying to make it on your own efforts. Quit trying to do that. Quit trying to find your satisfaction in anything else in this life. He is the living water. And if you come to him, you won't need anything else ever again. And so my prayer this morning for Stark Baptist Church and for North Monroe and for Northeast Louisiana is that God would make us a people desperate for him. So I want to invite the band to come back up, and I'm going to pray for us, and we're going to offer a time of invitation to you. And here's your invitation. Maybe this morning you realize, man, I have been trusting in my own efforts. Maybe God has opened your heart and mind to go, man, it has been weeks, months, years since I have truly come to him. And today is the day that you're ready to come back to him, to bring it all at his feet and lay it before him and spend some time with him. I want to invite you, if that is you. The altar is going to be open. I'm going to ask some of the deacons to come forward, and we'll be down here. Maybe you have never in your whole life experienced the taste of this living water that we're talking about, that is Jesus. I want to invite you, if you have never tasted and seen that, to come, and we're going to walk with you through that, what that might mean, how to surrender your life to Jesus.